Intervju Radija Študent.
V današnjem intervjuju se je Aleš pogovarjal z newyorško umetnico in glasbenico Marino Rosenfeld. Marina Rosenfeld je raznovrstna umetnica, katere delo obsega tako gramofonarske manipulacije, kot komponiranje v presečišču vizualnega in zvočnega ter glasbe in zvočne instalacije. V svojem delu zato prehaja, če nekar ignorira meje med komponiranjem, improvizacijo, zvočno umetnostjo in glasbo. Pri tem se poigrava med drugim tudi s prenosom sodobne evropske komponirane glasbe kot visoke umetnosti v igrive kontekste, bolj značilne za pop glasbo. Pred leti se je na ta način lotila predelave skladbe Lontano, madžarskega komponista Giorgia Ligetija. Njen performance Teenage Lontano v sodelovanju z lokalnim mladinskim pevskim zborom bomo lahko spremljali nocoj v večji dvorani Kina Šiške v okviru festivala Mesto žensk.
Okay, so tonight you're performing here with this work Teenage Lontano. Can you maybe just explain shortly the idea and
sure.
The concept behind it?
Yeah, so Teenage Lontano is a piece I originally created in 2008 for teenagers in New York. Mm-hmm. And it's always a surprise when you get another chance to perform a work. Mm-hmm. But it's actually had four or five productions now in different countries. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
nice and unexpected element to it. But originally, you know, I was interested in writing something for teenagers. You know, I had done pieces previously where I worked with amateurs or non-professional musicians in different contexts, sort of in the legacy of Cardew and others like that, who were interested in a kind of democratizing impulse about music performance, but also in a way that I think I'm thinking also a bit sculpturally, like having all of like a certain element in a piece allows other things to emerge. So if everybody is a woman, or everybody is a kid, or everybody is playing a certain instrument or something, I feel like that uniformity also allows interesting elements to emerge. So Teenage Antonio was kind of based on the idea that it would be interesting to take a kind of masterpiece of the 60s and this kind of like high modernist utopian high art composition from Gheorghe Ligeti and redo some of the strategies for making those kinds of sounds using young people and using contemporary technology. So that's how the piece works, with scores in the ear and MP3 players.
So they listen to the piece and interpret it?
No, not at all. They listen to a series of 17 different vocal scores that I composed that sort of began as a cover version of the Ligeti composition, but ended up just going its own way to a great extent, because my piece is twice as long as the Ligeti orchestral piece, and kind of goes in different places, and it has this whole electronic layer, which is kind of like a completely free element that I added. But it's true that the kind of pitch clusters that they move through as a choir are derived from the Ligeti composition.
So maybe you could say that the idea here is more important than, for instance, rhythm composition.
Well, the idea is to make a translation.
Okay.
So it's like a translation from this kind of, one could maybe say, beautiful but failed utopian modernism of 1967, to see how it works now in the 21st century with a different strategy. So I'm kind of borrowing from Ligeti and also borrowing from Cage to some extent, because some of how my piece works relies on chance operations. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to totally synchronize my piece. So the sort of inevitable messiness, you could say, of the kid's ability to follow my score actually ends up producing these sort of cloud-like structures that characterize the Ligeti composition.
So when you work with different people, of course, this piece also changes. How do you what is more important here for you, like these changes in interaction with particular people, or maybe the original idea? You already said it's much led to chance.
Everyone probably tries to do the same balance, every composer, between the faithfulness to their idea and letting interpreters kind of emerge inside the piece. So I think it's just a balance, and I try to keep in balance. But I'm obviously interested in these different places that have given me the opportunity to mount the piece, that something of the flavor of those young people emerge in the piece. And I think that as the piece unfolds, it's very visual, but nothing happens besides music. So over the duration of the piece, for audiences, I think you end up looking a lot also. You're listening, but you're also looking, and you can walk around.
There are also some other your pieces work and play with this visual. But since on this radio station where this interview is being processed, we heard we only know your work mostly from the recording Plastic Materials, and that's maybe another aspect. It's, you know, when you make a recording, it's basically a product. But what you do, it's more of a process. Okay, how do you relate this? I mean, what place does a CD recording, for instance, have in your
work? Well, you put it very well. You put it better than I can put it already. It's the difference between a product and a process. That's absolutely true. I don't make a lot of CDs. I have a new recording coming out in the beginning of next year. And I try to do something a little more packaged, a little more pop with CDs, because why not? Actually, I'm not putting out a CD, though. This time it's just going to be vinyl and digital. So no CD at all.
Okay.
But, you know, same concept. I don't think you have to put out on CD every performance that you do, and I don't do that. But on the other hand, on my website and on YouTube and on Vimeo and all these other places, you can look up all these performances. So hopefully people who... maybe they hear some of my CDs and like enjoy the music, they can Google it and get some other view of these pieces. And then I'm traveling as much as I can fit in, given other things in life. So sometimes get a chance to go somewhere and do one of these things live, and then hopefully people can come really experience it live, because I'm really interested in that live process much more than I am some kind of finished object.
Yeah, but when you, for instance, when you make every now and then a recording, you also change your stuff specifically for the recordings.
I mean,
for instance, this Teenage Lontano is here in three very short versions and with some rephrase.
I added all this kind of other sound from the rehearsal process and stuff into it, because I thought, like, that's a good way to represent it on CD, better than the performance, which you can look at on video and you can hear it. And I also have a binaural recording of one of the performances, which I'll do something with at some point. I'm kind of collecting all these binaural recordings, which are, you know...
Sorry, can you just explain binaural?
Well, binaural is when you're recording with two microphones that are located, like, you can do it, there's a couple of ways of doing it, but basically you're trying to, like, simulate a head with two ears that are 6 inches apart or whatever it is.
Okay.
So if you listen back to that on either headphones or in a surround sound room, you get a really more accurate picture of the three-dimensionality of the sound and how it moved in space, and how whoever had the recording device moved through space. So it's like really very, it's a much better way of capturing spaces in sound, but it's not really practical for radio or anything. But it's great for headphones.
Okay, this is probably a bit nerdy question, but do you make any difference between what is called a sound art and what is called a music?
I think that they have different meanings, those terms. You know, I myself, I find that I'm called a sound artist sometimes, but I do think of myself more as a composer, because I'm really interested in music, and I feel like the term composer could easily be more elastic and contain more elements to it. Sometimes we have such a limited idea of what a composer is, and anyone who's doing anything interesting suddenly has to be a sound artist and kind of reject the entire history of music. But since I'm really interested in music, it's just that I frame my pieces in a way that used to be thought of as like extra musical or outside, beyond music, then suddenly I'm a sound artist. But I think that the term music can really expand.
Well, do you think this is also related to the fact that, to the place of the performance? Like, if, I don't know, basically what is called sound art is is happening probably mostly in gallerias. So it's, I mean, it's also a different world.
But you know, there's galleries can be good containers for all kinds of activities, and not all of them need a new name the minute that they appear in the gallery.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think, you know, I don't have a problem with it per se. I think it's a useful term in some respects, but I'm not really willing to give up the notion of music.
Yeah.
I just think, like, sometimes people don't think what I'm doing is music because of, like, their limitations. It's not my limitation.
So how did you enter into musical world?
I always grew up doing music, and I studied piano, and then I just started to study art and study other things, and it all sort of converged for all the things that, you know, I feel lucky because I found some ways of to keep on dealing with everything that I'm interested in inside the works that I'm creating. Mm-hmm. So it's just a reflection of, like, my interests and my brain. My sensitivities, I guess, sensibility.
And what kind of places do you usually perform with? I mean,
well, Teenage
also
Montano,
your work is very differentiated and
different.
Well, you have very different work. You work with orchestras like this Teenage Montano, and you also perform as a turntablist. So
yeah,
probably you see a lot of different.
Yeah, it's really wide open, you know. I would say I do about half the work I do in musical context, half in a visual arts context. But it's not that the work is different. It's kind of like the same work. It seems to be able to happen in either one of those frames. I do care a lot about improvised music. So alongside my compositions, I'm always interested in continuing to improvise and play with other musicians, because I think it's, like, the hardest thing to do, and it keeps you, kind of keeps you sharp. And sometimes it goes well, and sometimes you fall, and it's like good, keeps you honest.
Okay.
Is it a bit real?
Okay, so what's the plan for tonight's concert? I mean, you intend to only do this Teenage Montano
thing? I'm just presenting this piece, so I actually don't think of it as a concert. It's never been done in a theater before. It's always been done in a more neutral space, like an empty garage or some kind of industrial space. So it's a bit of an experiment to try to do it as part of a concert. It bothers me a little bit because it's not a concert. It's really a composition. It's really a sound installation that has a kind of performative thing inside it. So we'll just try to be true to the piece, but do it inside this new frame, I guess you could say. And that's the best I can tell.
Yeah, okay. But okay, it probably depends on the audience also. So I guess this would be it for.
Okay.
Z newyorško glasbenico Marino Rosenfeld se pred njenim nocojšnjim nastopom v kinu Šiška pogovarjal Aleš.
Intervju Radija Študent.